Yesterday, I mentioned the teachings, many of the teachings and instructions, what seem to be instructions, aren't so much something to do, but more things that might be noticed. And that's really the intention of the suggestions or the exploration in the guided meditation, pointing to things that are possible to notice, but not so much something to try to do. So this distinction between body and mind is such an important one, because we do often, because of the way our minds work, bringing everything together into kind of a coherent whole, we don't always notice the distinction between what's happening in our bodies and what's happening in our minds. And in particular, in this relationship area, the attitude area, that can often just be an overlay that's not clearly seen. A very different experience, very different parts of our experience, the what's happening in our bodies and our relationship to it. So in beginning to see this distinction between body and mind, we can start to see also how these processes affect each other, how they condition each other. These processes are so intimately connected. This conditioned nature of experience is one of the aspects of understanding our experience that the Buddha really pointed to support us in seeing how suffering, how reactivity is created, and also how the wholesome qualities of heart and mind shape and affect our experience. Conditioning doesn't just happen with the reactivity. It also happens with balance of mind. Balance of mind shapes experience. Patience shapes experience. The quality of metta, of kindness, shapes experience. And so this conditioning nature of experience can be seen and recognized, and we feel the difference. We've been talking about kind of the difference between the feeling of when greed, aversion, and delusion are present, often feeling like a contraction, a constriction. And when they're not present, and when the wholesome qualities of mind, love, kindness, joy, balance of mind, patience, curiosity, mindfulness itself can create the conditions for a kind of an open, a spacious quality, a released or relaxed quality of the heart. And so this conditioned nature of experience is always happening. We can start to be curious about how these different processes of body and mind affect each other. So there's bodily experience that affects our mental experience. We see this pretty easily with perhaps an unpleasant a sensation that has an unpleasant quality to it. Now, again, I mentioned in the guided meditation, the unpleasantness itself is understood to be mental. Now, that may be harder to see with respect to unpleasant physical experience. But just an example, this one for me, around a taste, whether a taste is pleasant or unpleasant. So for example, when I have some milk after a chocolate chip cookie, the experience of milk is pleasant. If I have some milk after I've eaten a pickle, the experience is unpleasant. So it's conditioned. The unpleasantness or unpleasantness is not in the object. It's conditioned based on many things. It can be conditioned based on other physical circumstances, as in that example. You know, what has been physically in the mouth before? You know, it changes the conditions. It changes the way the physical receptors are meeting the experience. The milk hasn't changed, but the conditions that the body is receiving the milk has changed. And so this experience of pleasantness and unpleasantness constructed based on conditions. Actually, I'll say that current neuroscience also agrees with this assessment, that there's apparently a place in the brainstem, which if the place in the brainstem is damaged, we can no longer feel pleasantness and unpleasantness in the body. So it's understood that there's a place in the brain that constructs the experience of pleasant and unpleasant. It's hard to see sometimes, but just be curious about that difference. The sensation, what the sensation is, you know, pitch and tone and hearing, and then whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. You know, so for instance, you know, the sound of the bell might be pleasant in some circumstances. Often at the end of a sitting, it is pleasant. At other times, you know, if you're really having a smooth, you know, easy, spacious, settled sitting, the sound of the bell might feel like an interruption and feel unpleasant. So again, that would be a condition of mind that changes whether the physical sensation is experienced as pleasant or unpleasant. So again, the conditionality, the conditions around experience really shape whether experience is pleasant or unpleasant. So this is a very interesting thing to begin to notice. And partly because so much of our responses to experience are based on the pleasantness and unpleasantness of experience. So we have a physical sensation that we perceive as unpleasant. And out of that is born an emotional response. We don't like it. We want to get rid of it. We have a set of mental activities that follow on from there, conditioned by the experience of the unpleasantness. So the body experience can, you know, affect how our mind is. Body can affect mind. Mind can then also affect body. You know, we can have the experience of anger, for instance, arising. You know, something has happened that has triggered the response of anger, and then anger itself will affect the body. So the anger, the mental anger, will then shape the feelings in the body: tightness, heat, pressure, tension, maybe clenching. So there will be physical effects as a result of the mental experience. So again, this is the conditioning nature between body and mind. Mind can also condition other things happening in the mind. This is really, perhaps we can see this. We can see this with how thoughts shape emotions. So, you know, we're sitting in meditation, just pretty calm. A thought arises in our mind about a person that we've been having an argument with. The thought happens, and then we start thinking about that person and what happened in that conversation, and an emotion can be generated. So thoughts can create the conditions for emotions to arise. I talked about this with respect to seeing, that process of seeing how anger might have come into being, but seeing the thought before the anger arose, the mind could see the intention towards the anger and it let it go. So this is some of the value of understanding this conditioned nature. So thoughts can condition emotions, and emotions can condition thoughts. So when there is some kind of a strong emotion going on in our experience, it can also shape how we think about things. So we're experiencing a frustration, and then, you know, somebody comes up and says something to us, or we have to do something else, and that frustration, you know, gets applied to whatever this new thing is, and the way we think is shaped by that frustration. So there's so much interweaving, and in particular, the recognition of how our mental experience, how our emotions and thoughts, what are called in the Buddhist teaching mental formations, how they shape our experience. They're really understood as being the drivers of how our experience rolls on, how our experience tumbles on. The emotional response, the mental experiences, and this includes both the unwholesome and the wholesome. They both shape experience, as I said just a few moments ago. So one exploration that Sayadaw Utejaniya suggests or encourages as a kind of a curiosity, again, just not again as so much something to do, but maybe something that could be dropped in as a question. And this is, you know, how do these mind states, and in particular attitudes perhaps, how do they affect our experience? He has this fun way of thinking about it. He says that all of these mental activities are just doing their job. You know, they all have work to do, and they do actions. So anger, for instance, takes action in our system, and love takes action in our system. So he asks us to be curious about, well, what is the job description of these mind states? So what is anger? What is aversion? What is the nature of aversion? How does it do what it does? How does it affect our bodies, our thoughts, our experience? And so for myself, aversion is really one of the key mental, unwholesome mental states that I've spent a lot of time looking at. And so, you know, curiosity about how does this affect, you know, what is the nature of aversion? And in exploring this myself, you know, it's like the basic job description for me in seeing this, the basic job description of aversion is to separate me from something, you know, whether it's, you know, whether that aversion is a flavor of anger and wanting to get rid or push something away actively, or whether it's a flavor of fear where I want to get myself out of here. This nature of aversion is to want to separate me from whatever that experience is. So that's kind of the basic job description, you know, at its core. You know, there's lots of ways it might do that can be, you know, we can see the difference between how anger separates and how fear separates. But then also curiosity about how else does it work? The other piece that I noticed about that separation, or the nature of aversion, is that while it's got this nature to separate, there's a strong belief in there, kind of the delusion embedded in aversion, is that it believes that separation is going to bring happiness. And that's kind of the driving force underneath it. And so we've got this desire to separate, but the belief that it's going to bring some measure of happiness. It also tends to orient the mind, in my experience, when there is aversion happening, it's not enough that it separates from one thing. It then goes around searching for other things to separate from. So, you know, like this is, you know, I will walk into a room, a new place where I've never been before, and my mind will automatically notice the things I don't like about it. You know, that could be better. That could be fixed. That could be changed. Now, some people walk into a room and automatically notice the things that they appreciate. Now, so different minds have different conditioning. This is just my own mind and my own exploration of this. So the anger, its nature is to separate. It believes separation is going to create some measure of happiness, and it orients the mind to find things to separate from. But then not only that, in terms of how it affects the mind, it also affects the body. Aversion tends to create tension in our physical system. It tends to create unpleasantness in experience. When we have aversion in our minds, we tend to orient towards the unpleasant. We see things as unpleasant, so it tends to shape things in that way. We tend to perceive things, to recognize things through this filter or view of aversion. So we might, you know, see somebody, if we have aversion in our minds already. Oh, here's an example of, I remembered this one. I was doing walking meditation in a room with a lot of other people, and I had just been doing back and forth in this particular path of walking meditation. And at one point I came to the end of my path and I turned around and saw somebody's shoes at the end of the path. Now, I had noticed that there was aversion in my mind in general because I didn't like the crowded room. But when I turned around and saw those shoes, my mind just exploded with anger. Like, whose shoes are those? Who put those shoes at the end of my path? You know, the mind was oriented to seeing those shoes in an aversive way. If the mind had been in a state of spaciousness and love, it might have been, wow, you know, whose shoes are there? Could have been completely different. So the just being curious about how do our mental states affect our system? How do they affect our bodies? How do they affect the way the feeling, the perception? How does it affect how does it maybe condition other states of mind? How does it condition thoughts? Now, again, this is something that can be seen as opposed to something to try to find. So Sayadaw says that this kind of nature of aversion, that this is just aversion doing its job. You know, this is when aversion is functioning in the mind, this is what will be happening. It's not personal. It's not self, it's not me, it's not who I am. It is just the nature of aversion to function in this way. An encouragement to see the nature of our experience, as we've been exploring, the awareness and wisdom of the challenging, difficult, reactive states of mind will tend to create the conditions for them to weaken. Because we notice, we feel the way they impact our system, the way they create that tension, that constriction, create suffering in our system, and our system naturally wants to move in the direction of releasing that when it's seen clearly. You know, when it's not seen clearly, delusion gets on board with trying to figure out how can I get rid of that, adding more constriction to the system. And then there are the wholesome mind states. So what's the job description of the wholesome mind states? It's a job description of love, of metta. What's the job description of metta? What's the job description of wisdom as it arises in the mind? My sense of the job description of wisdom is that its nature is to understand and release dukkha, this wisdom that the Buddha is speaking of. When wisdom arises, we feel the release from suffering. That's the nature of wisdom arising. And so this practice that we're doing is creating the conditions, not only for the cultivation of the awareness, but the way that we're cultivating the awareness is creating the conditions for the cultivation of wisdom. So that that understanding, that mind, that mental experience that shapes, tends to shape freedom from suffering, tends to shape the direction of release from greed, aversion, and delusion. So let's take a 10-minute break. I'll see you in just a bit.